The Jericho Network on Westwood One.
Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Simmons SD550 electronic drum kit, just $399. Add your choice of AKG K52 headphones or a Shure SM48 mic, each just $39. Plus, the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing, lessons for the beginner on your list, and gift cards. The perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It is the pod of thunder and rock and roll, and it's all about rock and roll, more specifically heavy metal, with the founder of the greatest independent heavy metal record label of all time, Metal Blade Records, my old friend Brian Slagle. He has appeared on this show multiple times, always in different vestiges, but never once talking just about Metal Blade Records. Brian is the guy who discovered Metallica. Actually, he's the guy who became one of Lars Ulrich's first friends when Lars came to America in 1980. He gave Slayer their first album deal. He helped launch Armored Saint. How about the Goo Goo Dolls? All sorts of types of music. He is the heavy metal music guru, and you're going to hear his incredible story of how Metal Blade Records grew out of his love of metal and one compilation album. One. He's also sharing his Metallica story, how he hooked up with Slayer, what happened to Armored Saint, who were supposed to be bigger than Metallica, and how the rise of the cassette tape nearly bankrupted Metal Blade. We're also talking about a lot of the other bands and albums that Brian has worked with over the years. We can't cover them all, but we got a good section of them, and the rest of them are all explained and covered in Brian's great new book, For the Sake of Heaviness, The History of Metal Blade Records. That is out now. It's got the full story. It goes in depth on all the bands and music that we just couldn't get into this hour-long conversation. You can pick that up at Amazon.com. Don't forget to go through the Talk is Jericho links on the Podcast One website. But go to Amazon and check out For the Sake of Heaviness, The History of Metal Blade Records. It's funny, the Slagle's book came out the same time as my book. No is a four-letter word. That's available now at Amazon.com/shop/IamJericho. It's amazing. We did press this week in New York. Tons of signings. We had 1,300 people in Ridgewood, New Jersey, at the bookend store there. And it was just crazy. Did lots of great media, had lots of fun. But I want to just tell you something quickly about the book signings. I know some people were angry because they were pushed through the line and didn't get a selfie and all these different things. But you have to remember, there's 1,300 people there. So the idea is to get a chance to say hi to everybody. And there's still going to be some people that get missed or things that happen. Apologies all around. But we did get 1,300 people through the gates. Got a chance to say hi and shake hands with most of them. At least a smile and a wave, a signature, something along those lines. And I always equate it if, you know, I got the chance to meet Paul McCartney, which I did. It's in No is a four-letter word. But if I got a chance to say, meet Mick Jagger, and I only had a two-second chance to shake his hand, or he would sign something for me and maybe not get a chance to look up as he's saying hi. Sometimes that's just the way it goes. Not that I'm Paul McCartney or Mick Jagger, but that's a lot of people, man. 1,300 people coming through the gates to read No is a four-letter word. Had a great chance to, like I said, do some awesome media. Always like going to Sirius. And I actually saw a conversation between Sean Lennon, Theodore Richards, and Lucas Nelson. Willie's kid, Keith's kid, and John's kid. That was cool. I also met Dan Rather, the famous Dan Rather, who asked me what my book was called, and I said, No is a four-letter word. He said, wow, that's a great title. I should have thought of that. That's right, Dano. You should have thought of that. This is a self-help book, 20 principles on how you too can get all of your hopes and dreams achieved and accomplished in your life, as detailed by me, with such principles as the Gene Simmons principle, always look like a star, the Mike Damone principle, wherever you are, that's the place to be. Look at this. Isn't this great? We also got the Yoda principle. There is no try. There's only do. The Viv Savage principle. Have a good time all the time. The Vince McMahon principle. Work hard, then work harder. All these principles illustrated with my ridiculous stories. Same as usual. And I want, if you guys have been seeing my tweets lately, there's a lot of hashtag battle through the zombies. If you're wondering what that means, I'm going to read it for you right now. This is from the Keith Richards principle. And the Keith Richards principle says, let me see the exact writing here. Find a way to make it work. And I find a lot of times we find a way to make things not work. But the Keith Richards principle is find a way to make it work. And you'll understand why it's called the Keith Richards principle when you read the book. But this is where the Battle for the Zombies came from the chapter. One of my favorite movies is the original Dawn of the Dead. The remake is pretty badass too. And there's a great scene towards the end where Ken Foray's Peter is trapped on the top floor of a building surrounded by zombies. Even though a chopper awaits to take him to a safety on the roof above, he's tired of fighting and doesn't have it in him to get through the maze of the undead. Broken, beaten, scarred, he puts his revolver up to his forehead, but before he can muster up the will to pull the trigger, he sees a clear path through the mass of walkers, shakes himself out of his suicide pity party, and makes a run for it. He fights his way through the pack, races up a ladder to the roof, and climbs in the chopper to safety just as it takes off. That scene is the perfect example of what I'm preaching to you today, constant reader. Peter could have just rolled into a ball and waited to get eaten alive by the flesh-chomping zombies, but instead he beat the odds and survived. There's a lesson there. It may not be easy, but you can always find a way to make it work. Even if we're talking about the struggles we face every day, it's worth it to battle through the zombies to get what you want. Battle through the zombies. Actually sounds pretty kooky. Can we get that trending worldwide on Twitter, please? Please put this book down now, or put pause on the podcast you're listening to, and go post hashtag battle through the zombies now. Tag at I am Jericho while you're at it. So go do it. Hashtag battle through the zombies. That is from No is a Four Letter Word, the book that Dan Rather wishes he would have thought of the title for. And the book that we're talking about today on Talk is Jericho is Brian Slagle and For the Sake of Heaviness, The History of Metal Blade Records, telling the whole story of Slagle's early years and how he made Metal Blade Records one of the biggest record labels in the world, no matter what genre it is. So also for me, doing a few more signings for Noah's A Four-Letter Word, including tonight. That's going to be in Barnes & Noble in Orlando, Florida, on East Colonial Drive. So come by and check me out then. And then I'm also going to be at Barnes & Noble at The Grove in Los Angeles next Wednesday, September 6th. That's also at 7 p.m. Then I'm doing a signing in Oshawa, Ontario, on West King Street, September 18th at Indigo at 7 p.m. The signings in Tampa, Bookends in New Jersey, and Barnes & Noble in Tribeca. Plus, last week, Northeast Wrestling, thank you for Wrestling Under the Stars. We signed almost 400 books there, and another 150 books at the Words of Jericho show in Winnipeg. What a great show that was. I want to do more Words of Jericho shows. Stay tuned for that. And then, of course, also, as if I'm not hitting enough stuff for you, the new Fozzy record, Judas, comes out October 13th. You could pre-order that on Amazon.com right now. If you go pre-order it now, you'll get the full track listing. All the song titles are up there now if you want to go check that out. And also, we are coming to your town, or to some towns, as we hit the road on the Judas Rising Tour right here in the United States. We're going out with the amazing Gemini Syndrome and The Stir from Atlanta, Georgia. That's starting in a couple weeks, September 26th. We take the last train to Clarksville, Tennessee, the warehouse. September 27th, Fort Wayne, Indiana. September 28th, Columbus, Ohio. Really looking forward to that gig. 29th is Detroit, Michigan at the Riff Fest. September 30th, Libertyville, Illinois at the Austin Fuel Room. October 31st, Sonic Boom, Janesville, Wisconsin. October 3rd is Buffalo, actually closer to Niagara Falls, Rapids Theater. October 4th, Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. October 5th, Worcester, Massachusetts. October 6th, Wilmington, Delaware at World Live at the Queen. October 7th, Wilmington, North Carolina at the Muse. Then we wrap it up October 8th in Winston-Salem at Johnny and June's Saloon. I'm telling you right now, these are just the first shows of many. As a Judas, 4 weeks in a row on top of the Octane Biggins charts, still top 40 on the iTunes rock charts. charts, still top 10 on the iTunes metal charts, nominated for Song of the Year at the Loudwire Awards. Judas is on fire, on fire. And it's continuing to be on fire because we're going Judas Rising Tour in Europe, which starts October 27th, Birmingham, England. Then we're going to Dublin, Belfast, Chester, Manchester, London, Sheffield, Glasgow, Newcastle. Then we go over the pond to Amsterdam, Aschaffenburg, Pratteln, Ronkade, Rome, Vienna, Munich, Essen, Hamburg, Genk. We're all over the world, man, taking Judas to the masses. And we're doing VIP meet and greets and pre-show mini concerts for almost all of these dates. And the Fozzy VIP experience is one of the best out there. So get your tickets at FozzyRock.com. Come rock with us. All right. Come do it now. And Brian Slagle, the story of Metal Blade Records is coming up. But first, I want to tell you about a close friend of mine who changed my life. I'm talking with Diamond Dallas Page and DDP Yoga. Dallas has helped so many people from all walks of life, and I know he can help you too. A lot of you have already seen the inspirational video of Arthur Boorman, over 13 million views. The story is incredible. Army vet who's very overweight and crippled, did DDP Yoga. Now he's a shell of his former self physically. He's in great shape, and he is a yoga guru. You won't believe how Arthur was able to change his life in just 10 months. If you haven't seen that story, go check it out at ddpyoga.com/Jericho. And of course, there's another incredible DDP Yoga story that's making the rounds now. This one is about Jared Mollenkopf. Jared saw Dallas on the streets of Utah, went up to him and said he had lost 190 pounds in 8 months by doing DDP Yoga. Absolutely crazy, absolutely true. Dallas asked Jared if Jared had taken the 6 starting pictures. Jared said yes. Not only that, though, he'd also done something better and filmed his progress as well. So now, nearly 18 months later, Jared has lost 313 pounds. He's forever changed his life. I've seen the pictures in the video. It's unbelievable. And that's the thing about DDP Yoga. No actors, no models, real people with real stories and real life transformation. So go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho right now. Check out the Labor Day sale, 25% off the DDP Yoga DVDs. And you can get the DDP Yoga Now app so you can work out wherever you are, whenever you want. It's available for iOS and Android. And if you're in the UK, it's still not too late to meet the man who started it all. Diamond Dallas Page is doing the DDP Yoga UK Tour, running from September 8th through 18th. All the info at ddpuktour.com. DDP Yoga changed my life. It can change yours as well. Get started today. Best mental and physical shape you've ever been in. I'm telling you right now, ddpyoga.com/Jericho. Own your life and start today.
Here at Podcast One, we love hearing from you. We read every tweet and comment you send our way. So don't miss your chance to take our summer listener survey. Just go to podcastone.com and click on the survey banner. Or go to podcastone.com/mysurvey. It only takes a few minutes, and it gives you the opportunity to make a direct impact on your favorite shows. Tell us how you really feel so we can get to know you better. We value your thoughts and participation. So check out the survey at podcastone.com/mysurvey. Or click on the survey banner on podcastone.com.
This is Talk is Jericho.
I'm here with Brian Slagle, and it's cool because we've known each other for, I'm trying to think how we even met each other. Do you remember?
So yeah, the first time we met actually is at the famous Rainbow Bar and Grill.
Oh, okay.
You were having dinner with a bunch of people, and I was, and somebody mentioned, hey, there's Chris Jericho over there. You should go say hi. Or somebody said, you know, I don't know, somehow somebody put us together.
Yeah, metal.
I talked to you for, I don't know, 2 minutes or something about Fate's Warning and a couple other things. And then the next time I met you was at the, it was actually an interesting evening because I talked about this the other day, actually. It was at Iron Maiden at the Somewhere in Time tour.
So Somewhere Back in Time.
Somewhere Back in Time tour, 2008.
Yes.
At the Forum.
Yes.
And you, I was there with Kerry King, mm-hmm. and you were talking to Lars. I was trying to get Kerry to Lars to kind of, because Kerry's like, I want to go talk to Lars. Well, just, let's go. He's like, well, just come with me. So we kind of interrupted your conversation, and you go, Brian, hey Brian, how's it going? I said, how do you even remember or know who I am?
That was actually the first night I met Lars, and I was probably just trying to say, hey Lars, look, I'm cool, I know Brian Slagle too. I love the fact that you had to take Kerry over to Lars. It's like, that's kind of in the years I was like, well, you go talk to him. No, you go talk
yeah.
to him, you know? But it's funny because I pull up to an address that was supposed to be here today, and it's like this strip mall. It's like, you know, there's like Falafel Place and all this place. I'm like, this can't be where the illustrious metal Hellblade is, and of course you give me the write-offs. And it's like in a beautiful kind of a LA, you know, esque office building. And it's funny, what I was saying is that knowing you just as a dude, we always talk about metal and we went to Metallica together. And I forget how much of a music mogul, and I know you don't like to hear that because you're a humble guy, but of a music mogul in heavy metal that you really are. I mean, this place is huge.
Yeah, you know, it's nice. It's a little corporate. We had cooler offices before out in Agoura Hills that were a little bit more metalized, but they were too far away from everything, so we had to move back.
That's the way it is now. Now, I was going to bring up too, as we're here in your boardroom. I got a call the other day from, his name is escaping me, Martin Popoff.
Oh yes,
who's doing a book on every Maiden album.
Yep,
and mentioned that he spoke to you. So he came to me and asked me which ones you want to talk about. And of course, you know me, dude, I'm the ultimate Maiden fan. Give me Iron Maiden, give me Book of Souls, I'll talk about any in between.
Yep.
So I know which ones I chose, and I'll tell you in a second, but which ones did you pick?
I picked Number of the Beast, of course, because it's my all-time favorite record. But right. I wanted to go back a little earlier, so I picked the first Iron Maiden record.
Okay.
That was a significant record in my life, just because when I heard the Soundhouse tapes, when I was tape trading, a friend of mine put it on the end of an AC/DC live tape and said, "Hey, there's this band Iron Maiden you might like." I'm like, "What is this?" And that started me on the long.
It was on that Prowler.
Prowler, was an Invasion.
Oh, Invasion.
And
you remember Tomorrow, Iron Maiden, something like that?
Yeah, I think that was it.
I know Prowler was on it, though.
Yeah. So, and that started me on the long, dark path onto the new wave of British heavy metal. And then when the first Iron Maiden record came out, I mean, that was just life-changing for me, because that was, if I could put together the perfect heavy metal band with the perfect sound, the perfect look, the perfect album cover, everything, that was Iron Maiden. Mm-hmm. And that was that first Iron Maiden record. And that was really kind of just got me, okay, this, as much as I loved metal and I was into everything, I was into new British heavy metal and stuff, that was the one that kind of galvanized that this is my genre. And
yeah.
This is where I'm not ever leaving from.
And it's funny, I don't know, 4 or 5 years younger than you, or whatever it could be. The way that you look, it could be 1 year, it could be 10 years younger, it could be 10 years older, I don't even know. But and you're going to hate me for this, I'm like, okay, everyone's going to choose Number, everyone's going to choose, like, Power Slave is my favorite. But
nice.
I was like, I'm going to go to one that no one really talks about, and that was Somewhere in Time.
That's fine.
Which is very, after going through it, very underrated in the Maiden
catalog. Absolutely.
There's no bad tunes on it. I mean,
nope.
They're really all great. And then I went full on into X Factor.
Oh.
I always got to throw that at you.
For those of you, which is all of you out there, don't know, those records did not exist. That time period did never exist in my world. I've never heard it. I've never seen it. It did not in my world. It never happened.
Well, the problem with the record is it's the same thing. I said this to Martin. The same thing that happened with Van Halen 3 with Gary Cherone.
Yep.
You have a band, and Steve's writing most of the songs. Because I made a great point. Bruce is gone. Adrian's gone.
Yep.
It's all Steve and then whatever Yannick put in there. But Steve is writing songs for Bruce Dickinson's voice.
Sing. Yep, exactly.
And he hires a guy who's much more of like a Jim Morrison type of a singer.
And I love Blaze.
Right.
Great guy, great singer, but just not for Iron Maiden.
Miscast.
Yep, totally. Big time.
So when you go through that album, and this, you know, I'm not going to get into debate, but it's not Blaze's fault. It's Steve's fault for giving him those songs that are in a range that aren't good for him.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with you there. I don't think certainly it wasn't Blaze's fault. He's just like, hey, here's a gig, I'm going to do
right.
it.
Right, do what you're told, kid.
Yeah.
Sing these songs.
And, you know, nice guy, and I know how that works. Like, you go from a guy, and, you know, Bruce was probably, you know, there was some butting of heads before he left, obviously. So you get somebody in that's going to do whatever you want, that's not going to have any say.
Sure.
That's usually a very nice person that's a good singer, but not the right fit.
Yeah, and the same with Van Halen 3 with Gary Cherone.
Totally.
He sang great on the songs he was given, but they aren't good songs.
Exactly.
So, but I wanted to talk about X Factor, because I know that no one's probably, it's like the last kid in the soccer game on the field. It's like, okay, I'll take X Factor. All right, I'll take Virtual Eleven.
So let me ask you this. So as a true Iron Maiden fan, yes. Do you like those records?
Well, and let me, this is why I brought this up to you, because you're all probably right. The only other guy, well, not the only other guy, there's a million, but they're the biggest Maiden fan I've ever met. Besides me, and even maybe more so in certain eras.
Yes.
I do
definitely not that era.
Yes, I do not like Virtual 11. I think it's an awful record. I do like X Factor the same way that I like Pink Floyd Animals. If I'm in a dark mood I like to listen to because it's a very dark and almost depressing record the way it's written, because, you know, get philosophical, but Steve had just gone through a divorce.
Yep,
Bruce
yep.
is gone. Adrian's gone. It's a dark time for Iron Maiden. So it's a dark record. It's also the beginning of the modern day Maiden, where there's these super long intros that are very slow, super long outros. They still do it to this day on Book of Souls, you know, mm-hmm. where they have these songs that would probably be better suited as 6-7 minutes mm-hmm. that are 9-10 minutes long.
But, you know, you're funny because you're in the age group. And I have a lot of friends that are in yes. your similar age group where you'll pick a record that we all would say, are you crazy?
Yes.
And you're like, I had the same conversation, and you'll appreciate this as well. We're in New York with after Iron Maiden. Speaking, it ties into Iron Maiden because after Iron Maiden played Barclays in New York.
Just a couple weeks ago? A
couple weeks ago. Yeah. I was with a couple friends of mine, and they introduced me to one of their high school friends who's a big metal guy, and now he's some venture capital dude or whatever. His favorite band is Kiss.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking, and Kiss is one of my all-time favorite bands. When I was 14 years old, I worshipped them. And I said, so what are your favorite, like, give me your favorite Kiss record. So he, you know, gives me whatever, Love Gun or whatever. The Elder. Like, The Elder? He goes, The Elder. I'm like, I mean, I'm not going to hate on that record because there's actually a couple of decent songs on there. But again, he's almost the same age as you are. And he kind of came in a little bit later than all of us did. So for some reason, you have these weird open minds about these weird records that everybody else hates.
I'm not a kid of the 70s. I'm a kid of the 80s. And all,
sure.
of our, and all of our favorite bands morphed into that sound in the 80s, which is when I caught on. So you're talking Scorpions, Rush.
Yep.
You know, Kiss. I like all those 80s
versions of those bands,
because
sure.
that's when I got aboard. And the funny thing is with The Elder, like, I hated it when it first came out, when I got into it, shall I say, because I got into Kiss in 84, moved backwards. And I've come to like it. And when I had Paul on last time, we were talking about Revenge, which is my favorite Kiss record, which gets a lot of flack from certain people.
It's not a terrible...
I liked the return to form of that time, because you can remind, you know, but I go, you know, in retrospect, The Elder ends up being a fairly good album. Paul's like, no, it's the shits. It's a terrible record. I sang way out of my range. Just the Boy's awful. The whole thing is stupid. If you like it, good for you, but you need to get your head checked. So even Paul doesn't like it.
So you should get Steve Harris on here and ask him about
Virtual 11,
yes.
which is totally bad. But
well, actually, about both of those records.
But see, I can still stand for X Factor. But like right. I said, I understand why it's so critically not revered, but I'll leave it this. If you hear Rock in Rio, which was the live record they did after mm-hmm. Brave New World, they play Klansmen,
yes, which
and they play Sign of the Cross.
Yes, which sung by Bruce Dickinson are great.
Great tunes.
Yep.
That's all I wanted to
hear. I agree.
Yeah.
I will not disagree with that.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm totally there.
I love this. I love talking to guys like you and talking with Lars. I had Brian Posehn and those type of guys. Just huge metal fans, and you could sit here for hours and talk about metal, and from the most obscurities to the biggest bands in the world, and once again forgetting that you are a big part of the metal scene creating Metal Blade Records, and the book has just come out. I can't remember what it's actually called.
For the sake of heaviness, which is the history of Metal Blade Records,
an Armored Saint song.
Yeah, we were kind of sitting around. BMG is the one that's publishing it. I was sitting in their offices in New York, and they said, "What about a title?" I'm like, I don't know. You guys have any suggestions? I had no idea. And it's somewhere in the back of my head that came into my, I said, well, what about For the Sake of Heaviness? And they're like, oh, we love it. I'm like, all right, well, let me just make sure that Armored Saint will allow me to, I figured they would, but
yeah.
I still had to go, can I have your blessings? And they said, yeah. So it kind of, you know, encapsulates what it is.
But like, the best thing is that song, which is on Delirious Nomad, is only called For the Sake.
For the Sake. Well, and that's what really bothered me about that song too, is it was called, it is called For the Sake of Heaviness, but they took Of Heaviness off because supposedly the record company was giving them a hassle about that. So we reissued those records for a while, and I said, we have to right the wrong, and we put it For the Sake of Heaviness on there, and it went back to Chrysalis again, and or whoever owns Chrysalis now, and it's again For the Sake.
It's probably you at this point.
Yeah, I wish.
You might actually have a stake in
I
that.
I wish.
But you know, to write this book, you know, of this great story, the journey of Metal Blade Records. First of all, why was it the right time to write a book? And did you write it yourself?
No, I had a co-writer,
okay.
Mark Eglinton, who did the Rex Brown from Pantera book, and he did Nurgle from Behemoth books, and he did a not authorized but not unauthorized James Hetfield book, and he's done a lot of stuff. And you know, I talked to a couple different guys about writing. I liked his style. I thought we meshed pretty well, and I think we had the same vision of how we wanted the book to read. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so I would just sit down and basically people have been bugging me to do a book forever, and I was like, yeah, you do that when you're old. And now I'm kind of getting old, and we're also we're figuring out what are we going to do for our 35th anniversary, because we've done a million other things. And I thought, book kind of makes sense for now, like that's a good chunk of time, and I better start telling these stories before I start forgetting them, maybe. We decided to do it and sat down and wrote it.
You know, just to think, and we'll go through a bunch of different stuff here, but when we're on the subject of Armored Saint, it's interesting to me because I'd always heard, and you write about this in the book, that especially when Metallica became prevalent, like in that time frame, Metallica wasn't the band that was destined for greatness, mm-hmm. in the opinions of the fans and the scene. It was always Armored Saint, mm-hmm. was the band that was going to be the next Priest or Maiden.
Yep.
Was that the case?
Yeah, we all thought that. In fact, so much so, there's a couple of stories I'll tell you that kind of encapsulize that. One time I ever left a hockey game early, which is pretty rare. Kings were playing the Sabres in 1986. It was the Wasp Metallica Armored Saint tour.
Right.
And Metallica had headlined every one of those days except for LA. They played the Palladium and Armored Saint headlined over it. I had to leave the hockey game early to see Metallica. Uh-huh. And yeah, Armored Saint headlined over Metallica and LA at the Palladium in
85 probably.
I think it was 85. Yeah. But even so, you know, when, unfortunately, when, you know, Cliff passed away, you know, I talk about this all in the book too, when Lars called me and said, hey, we need a new bass player, you know, do you know anybody? I said, well, Joey Vera would be the obvious choice. He said, I already asked him, he didn't want to do it. And even at that point, Armored Saint was still, you know, I mean, look, Joey had grown up with all those guys. They were childhood friends.
Sure.
He didn't want to leave. And they still, you know, Armored Saint still wasn't that far away from where Metallica was even in 1986 after Cliff passed away. So, yeah, we all kind of thought that. But
was there even, was this just a rumor? Or was it true that James didn't want to sing at one point and wanted John Bush to?
Definitely not a rumor. That is true. I mean, James never wanted to sing, mm-hmm. but they couldn't find another singer. And then when he started hanging out with Armored Saint, they loved John Bush. So they were like, hey, come be our singer.
Yeah,
come
yeah,
be
Yeah.
Was like, ah, I
same thing. Got my
yep.
own thing going on. I remember when you and I went and saw the 30th anniversary of Metallica at the Fillmore in San Francisco. They had John Bush.
Yep.
And James said, "We've been waiting 30 years to get this guy as our singer. Tonight we finally get him." He goes, "I've just been holding his place yeah. for 30 years."
Exactly.
But yeah, and you talk quite a bit about Armored Saint because they had the steam, then they lose it by member changes. Then Dave Pritchard passes away.
Yeah, that was a big one.
And then probably what is their best album, The Symbol of Salvation, which you were kind of the broker in getting that happening.
Sure. Well, people ask, you know, especially talking about the book all the time, they say, what's like your greatest moment, or your favorite, or one of your favorite moments, your favorite albums? And it's all really impossible to say. But I will say one of the most gratifying things that I did in my career was basically getting that record made. Because, you know, Armored Saint grew up with us, and they were the first band that we signed that went to a major label, which was really helpful to us because they were telling everybody about, hey, we came for this little label, Metal Blade. It's like, wow, really cool. So they had done three records with Chrysalis. Dave Pritchard unfortunately passed away. He was their main guitar player and songwriter. And they were pretty much done. Like, you know, they weren't really a band. They were kind of sitting around, but they had made.
So they were a two guitar player band. And then at that point, it was just Dave.
Just Dave.
So when Dave passed away, they just got a bass player, drummer, and a singer.
Pretty much. And Dave was, you know, even then when they were a two guitar player band, Dave was the writing. I mean, he was the guy writing most of the music, the driving force, really. So when he passed away, I think they all thought, nah, that's it. They lost their deal with Chrysalis, but they had made all these amazing demos while they're trying to, you know, keep with Chrysalis or get a new deal before Dave passed away. So I had all these demos and these great songs, and I kept asking them, we can't let these amazing songs die. We have to do something with them. It wouldn't be fair to the songs. It wouldn't be fair to Dave because Dave put his heart and soul into these. So I finally, after badgering them forever, got them to reform, do the record. We'd just gotten our deal with Warner Brothers at the time, so we put it through Warner's. We got Dave Jordan, who did Alice in Chains and Jane's Addiction, to produce
doing, it. Sound of White Noise as well.
Did Dave?
I think Dave Jordan. I don't know, whatever. It sounds familiar.
He might have. I forget. But, you know, legendary producer. You know, we got Q Prime to help manage the band and just kind of got it running again. And it's my favorite Armored Saint record. And it's
the best Armored Saint record.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
I agree.
Mean, it really is great. And then also having Tainted Pass with the solo from Dave Pritchard on
yep.
there. Really well done stuff.
Yeah, awesome. So that was a huge highlight.
So let's talk about another huge highlight in Metal Blade history. Of course, Metallica. You and I have talked about it so many times, but I want want you to share it with all the Sexy Beast Talk is Jericho listeners, and we'll do that. But first, I want to share with all of them the great new way to be the best-dressed man on the block or woman on the block without stepping foot into a mall or retail store. I'm talking about Bombfell. Every girl's crazy about a sharp-dressed man. That's what I'm doing. I love how easy it is. All I had to do to get started was complete a simple questionnaire at bombfell.com. It took me less than 5 minutes to do it. Then I got matched up one-on-one with a dedicated personal stylist. You don't pay anything when you sign up, either nothing. Bombfell is the only styling service that doesn't charge any fees to work with them. You just pay for the clothes you keep. You get free shipping and returns. You try all the clothes in your own home. You can preview all the items that the stylist picks for you before it all ships. Guys, Bombfell is the easier way for all of us dudes to get better clothes. And I know most of you are just like me. You hate to go shopping, but now you don't have to worry about it anymore because someone does it for you. Bombfell is completely personalized. Every single piece is handpicked for you by your own stylist. Imagine how good you're going to look without stepping foot in the mall. The stylist emails you the selections, and then you have 48 hours to make any changes or just to cancel altogether. Bombfell is flexible as well. You can get clothes once a month, every couple months, even every third month. And like I said, you can cancel at any time. And because I love Bombfell so much, I asked them to hook up the Talk is Jericho listeners, all of you sexy beasts, with a special deal. So if you go to bombfell.com/Jericho, you can get $25 off your first order. That's Bombfell, bombfell.com/Jericho. Get $25 off your battle shoes. Give it a try. You'll be hooked and you'll love having your own personal stylist. That's bombfell.com/Jericho. 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 Go get styled up right now. Styling and profiling. Woo!
This holiday, switch to Cricket Wireless and get a free LG Fortune with no annual contract. Cricket Wireless, something to smile about.
Requires number ported and service activation, minimum $30 per month. First month service charge and in-store activation fee up to $25 due at sale. Tax and restrictions apply. One-time fees may apply. See store for details.
You're listening to Talk is Jericho.
In the pantheon of heavy metal in the 80s, it still blows my mind that the biggest, I don't even know if independent, let's just say the biggest heavy metal record label of all time, because there's no other metal labels, and the biggest metal band of all time basically started together, which is such a great story, and we've talked about it before, but I want you to tell it, and also acclimated by this great forward that Lars Ulrich does for the book. And Lars is not shy of words. You know, he did a great speech for Deep Purple going in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He's always very articulate. And his, like, Paul Stanley did the forward to my new book. It's one page. Lars is about 10 pages.
Not quite that long, but it's long. Yeah.
But it's really well done and just shows how you guys have been, what's the word I'm looking for, parallel lives and careers almost since you met each other.
Yeah, it's it really is kind of a crazy story, but the backstory is Lars moved to L.A. from Denmark in 1980, and shortly thereafter went to a Michael Schenker Group show at the Country Club in Reseda, California. And the only two people at that time who knew anything about what was going on in England, the new wave of British heavy metal, was my friend John Cornerans and I. John sees a kid in the parking lot wearing a Saxon European T-shirt. Now, number one, in 1980, nobody knew who Saxon was, let alone had a European T-shirt.
European tour or something?
Yeah,
like that.
So he ran up to him and goes, "How do you know about Saxon?" He goes, "What do you mean? How do you know about Saxon?" He said, "I basically moved here from Denmark a few weeks ago." And he said, "Oh, you got me from Brian." So the next day or two, we're all hanging out together, talking about music and listening to records because he had stuff that we didn't have and we had stuff that he didn't have. So the three of us just became really good friends.
Did you say he just showed up at your house?
Yeah, I can't remember the exact thing of like exactly how it happened. But this is way before cell phones or you didn't have my number. So then he just like came by, or he said he was coming by. I can't remember exactly the story.
You know, but let me tell you, like, this is obviously different life paths. But I was in Winnipeg in about 1986, And we used to, there used to be outdoor hockey rinks. That's where we grew up playing hockey, outdoor rinks in minus 30. Oof. And so you'd go to the boxes, you'd call them, which would be like, you know, where you wait to get on. Yeah, the boxes, you know, the side where the players wait to get on the ice.
Benches,
the players' benches, yeah. And we used to go drink there. And there was a place about 20 minutes from my house. It was called Lincoln Junior High School. And my friend and I were walking there with a box of beer, probably 15 years old. And we were walking past these other two guys. They looked like tough dudes. And you know, when you're 15, like, any teenagers are scary because you're just a kid too in an open field. Walked by the guy, and I was wearing a Master Puppets t-shirt. The guy goes, "Hey, you like Metallica?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Have a beer." And we went and hung on the box. We're still friends to this day. His name is Lee. But that's another example of just a t-shirt alone would make you friends with someone. Because in 86, there wasn't a lot of Metallica fans either.
Especially in Winnipeg.
So just seeing that shirt instantly makes you, I want to talk to this guy and see what he knows about what's going on. And that's awesome. What you have with Lars.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, we just became friends and we would drive hours on end to record stores and all this stuff. And one day, we were sitting at his house in Newport Beach, and he had just a drum set sitting in the corner. It wasn't even put together, just like pieces sitting around. And he was like, "I'm going to start a band." I'm like, "Yeah, sure you are, Lars. Sure you are." So fast forward to, you know, me, you know, working at a record store and doing the fanzine and all this sort of stuff, and deciding to put together a compilation album of LA heavy metal bands. And Lars says, "Hey," calls me up and says, "If I put together a band, can I be in your record?" I'm like, "Sure." And that, of course, ended
if I put together the best. Here's the thing, like, and we don't have to go into great detail, but you're working in a record store, you're writing a fanzine, and that's how it was back then. You would be, you know, you would write to other people to get them to send you tapes or whatever it may
tape
be.
Tape trading, yep, big time.
And because you kind of have your ear to the scene, you came up with the idea, why don't I just put out a compilation album of all these different bands? Because that was the thing. Had you seen other compilation albums?
Well, here's the thing. So, I mean, obviously, being a big fan of the New Wave Ripper heavy metal, they had Metal for Mothers and these other things.
Metal for Mothers, right.
But in the U.S., we had nothing. And there was this scene in L.A. where you had, you know, bands like Motley Crue and Rad and Bitch and Steel all playing around. They're really great bands, but nobody knew it existed. There was no press. There were no record labels. Nobody knew it existed.
And this is a heavier Rat and heavier Motley Crue. This is 81, 82 before the glam. Yep. The hair band thing started. Yeah.
Big time. So I was just worried that nobody would ever know this scene would exist. It would just fall away. So I thought, well, I got to do something. Maybe if I put together a compilation album, that might actually help the scene a little bit. And Motley was supposed to be on it in the first place as well, because they were heavy in the fanzine. I knew them. I knew their managers. In fact, their managers came to my mom's house, sat on my mom's couch, and said, "We have 900 Motley Crue records. What do we do with them?" I said, "Well, take them to the distributor I know, Green World. They'll help you." And the next, they got pretty good. But they also have ended up, you know, not being on the album.
Does Nicky know? Do you ever talk to Nicky about that?
I don't know the last. I probably talked to Nicky the last time like 20 some odd years ago.
Gotcha.
I see Vince every once in a while.
It's so funny you wouldn't have run into him somewhere. You know,
it's weird. No, you would think so, right? But yeah, I haven't. It's probably been 25 years.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, just all these bands that came from LA, you have a little bit of a fingerprint. I mean, obviously some bigger than others, but even Motley Crue, you had a little bit of influence in back of the day.
I mean, look, right place at the right time. Yeah. I mean, being around at that time was just pretty amazing to do. So yeah, so put out the record and
the first Metal Massacre. You have, who are the biggest bands on that one?
Rat, Metallica, then you have other smaller bands like Sirith Ungol, Malice.
Okay, so besides Metallica, so you got this lineup of Rat and Sirith Malice and all these bands, and Lars is still trying to put together a band to be on your album.
He brought me the tape literally the last second he could, very last day. I'm like, "Dude, if you don't get me a tape by this day, it's not going to be on, because this is the day we have to finish it up and get it done." So I think they recorded it the night before and brought it in on a cassette tape, and we had to bump it up to reel to reel. And that's partially the reason why that Metallica was misspelled. If you don't know, on the very first edition, Metallica is spelled with two T's. And that's because he gave me everything at the very last minute, and this is, you know, 1982, years before you could, you know, proofread
Photoshop
or any of this stuff.
Or whatever, yeah.
And so I'd given it to the typesetter to do the typesetting, and again, there's no way to proofread anything. And I guess because Metallica didn't exist in the English language, she must have thought there should be two T's in there, so she put two T's in, and I got the record. I'm like, "Oh, whoops, that's not right."
What did Lars say to that?
They were thankfully not happy about it, but not, you know, super pissed off. They're just happy they're on a record at that point. So, you know.
What can they really do, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember the first time a guy showed me the Metallica record, my friend was with me, pronounced it Metlica.
Yeah.
Is this Metallica?
Metallica was in another
metal,
good one.
Metallica? Yep. Metallica? Obvious question. I don't know if it's even answered in the book is, you know, at this point in time, once you put out the Metal Massacre and you start up basically the Metal Blade record label, why wasn't Metallica signed to Metal Blade?
No money. I mean, I had no money starting this out. I never started out to have a record label. I was just doing it to help the scene out. I never thought in a million years I would do that. And I had no money. I had no money. They had no money. Because they came and said, hey, we can record a record for like $10,000. That's great. You have $10,000? Because I sure certainly don't. So it really just a matter
$10,000 might have been, might as well have been $10 million.
A million, exactly. Right, right. I mean, even $5,000 wouldn't, we didn't have anything. We didn't have, you know, a dollar. So it just never really happened.
Because you were thinking at the time that you were going to be a writer. Of going
yep.
to do, you know, for Sounds or Kerrang or...
Me. Yeah, I mean, the whole time I was just doing this to help the scene out. I never thought it was going to turn into a record label or anything. That was never my intention.
So, but once the Metal for... I keep wanting to say Metal for Massacres. Metal Massacre goes out, and then there's a big demand for it. How do you start finally releasing albums, per se, on Metal Blade?
Yeah, well, what happened after that was one of the distributors came to me and said, we know you don't have any money, but you seem like you kind of know what you're doing, so we'll give you a pressing and distribution deal. So we'll actually manufacture the stuff for you and be able to distribute it. So if you can bring us something, we can put it out. So I thought, all right, let me try to do that. So I just went to all the bands I knew and said, if we can somehow make a recording, I can put it out. So... Bitch did something, Armored Saint did something, some of these other bands started doing stuff, and then we were
was
able
Bitch
to
first
do it. Bitch was the first band.
Official release on Metal
first
Blade.
First official signing of Metal Blade, yep.
Betsy Bitch.
And then I think Armored Saint was the third or fourth, and then we kind of just started doing stuff from there.
Was that an EP, Armored Saint?
Yeah, three-song EP, Armored Saint.
What was it called?
It's the Armored Saint EP.
Yeah, I don't think
we ever had, there was no title.
You know, it's funny, and we've talked this before, but growing up in Winnipeg, like I said, my record store was Records on Wheels.
Yep.
Where guys like you would work there.
Were there wheels there?
No, but the motto was a record actually on wheels, the artwork on the shop. But you'd go into the back of the room and you'd flick through you know, not to sound like an oldster, but something my kids will never know the feeling of flick, flick, album, yep. album, yep. And you got your index finger and you're flipping through, and then you see a cover that's interesting, you pull it out, you look at it, and 9 times out of 10, the albums that I would select would be Metal Blade releases under the label of Bonzai.
Yes.
Which did not get written about in the book, but how did all Metal Blade albums in Canada be Bonzai albums?
Well, obviously this is way back in the early days of independent distribution, so we had no partners or no way to get it to these other countries. So somebody would, you know, it's Music for Nations in the UK, Roadrunner in Europe, and then this label Bonzai in Canada. It was a guy that was working at a record store that was a big metal fan that wanted to put stuff out of Canada. So he licensed all the stuff in Canada, everything from us and Megaforce and everybody.
So he would license it and you would send him
the artwork and the masters, and he would manufacture and sell
and
it up in Canada.
He would release it. I wonder, did you ever know what Bonzai bands did the best? Did you ever have any privy to that sort of?
No, I don't think anybody does, because he eventually went bankrupt and never paid most everybody. So I don't think anyone has any idea. But I mean, I think he had Metallica, Kill 'Em All,
yes,
and
the Slayer records,
all the Slayer stuff. So
you know, the Armored Saint, the Lizzie Borden. I mean, yep. All that stuff was on Bonzai.
Omen. I would imagine the Metallica and Slayer have got to be the biggest ones. I'm sure.
Well, absolutely, what was Kill 'Em All on label wise?
Megaforce.
On Megaforce, that's right. Yeah, Forgot about that. Was kind of like the East Coast version of Metal Blade.
Pretty much.
So then, was Slayer the first big band that you signed to Metal Blade, Brian? And before you answer that, think about it. Let me say a quick thank you to another one of the great Talk Is Jericho sponsors who makes it possible for me to do this show for free for twice a week. And it's who's going to help me win some money this football season. I'm just going to make some money and never give it up. I'm talking about my bookie. I know how much research you guys do on teams, players, stats when trying to decide which games and teams to bet on, and where you'll be placing your bets is just as important on who you're betting on. So that's why I tell people to go to MyBookie.ag. MyBookie's been in this business for years, and they've been the number one rated sports online action site for 3 years running. Okay, join thousands of online players, sign up and start betting at MyBookie, and if you use my promo code Jericho, you can collect up to 100% 10% bonus and double your bankroll on the house. Don't waste your time betting anywhere else. Sign up with my bookie, because when you win, they pay, and they pay fast. Seriously, 2 business days and you got your money, man. My bookie has in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and an all-new best-in-class mobile website that makes betting on the go super easy. And like I mentioned, unlike some other websites you might find, MyBookie offers fast, no-hassle payouts when you win. They're fast. That means you get paid fast. So get your wagers in for the first full weekend of the regular college football season. So exciting. Are you going to go for Alabama over Florida State? Huh? How about Michigan over Florida? That's a tough one. How about you want to lay some money on LSU versus BYU? Whatever your pleasure, whatever your potion, you can do it. You can make it. MyBookie.ag, and use my promo code Jericho when you sign up to get MyBookie to match your deposit with up to a 100% bonus. Okay, visit MyBookie.ag today or call 844-900-BETS. All right, 844-900-BETS. Come on, come on. I said 844-900-BETS. You know you're gonna win at MyBookie. You play, you win, you get paid, you make the money, you never give it up. So check out MyBookie. I'm getting heated up here. Sign up today, use my promo code Jericho, and get your deposit matched with up to a 100% bonus. MyBookie.ag, MyBookie.ag. Go win some money. Do it now. Everybody's got a to-do list: to drop off the dry cleaning, pick up some milk, take out the garbage. Here's an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance, okay? How about that? And the good thing is you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you got to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your poche. It just might be the most rewarding to-do you do today.
Talk is hockey. Talk is Jericho.
So was Slayer the first big band that you had on Metal Blade as far as selling records?
Yeah, absolutely. They were the first ones that really kind
of
broke through.
How did you con them or con them? How did you...
it was a con. No.
How did you convince them?
So,
which is half con.
Again, you mentioned Bitch, and they were playing a show in Orange County and Anaheim. It was either Radio City or Woodstock. I forget which club. But anyway, I'd never really been out to Orange County to see bands, so I thought, I'll go out to the show. Some of my friends are there. And there's some interesting-looking bands opening, so I thought, I'll check out the opening bands, one of which being Slayer. And they went on, and they had their old makeup and all that crazy stuff, and then some fake smoke and things going on. They were amazing. They played kind of similar when Metallica came out. They played maybe 2 or 3 originals. The rest were all covers.
Really?
And they were amazing. And it's funny, because to this day, Carrie and I argue over this. I swear they played Phantom of the Opera by Iron Maiden, and it was amazing, and that's what really got me going. He says, we've never played that ever. And Tom and Dave can't remember anything about that, so who knows. But whatever they did.
Well, Tom wasn't definitely singing Phantom of the Opera, was he?
Well, I mean, he was doing what he could on that. But it sounded heavy and cool. So, yeah, I went backstage afterwards. They had a manager guy. I said, hey, you know, I do these Metal Massacres. I'd love to have the band on. He said, oh, we know about them. We're totally into it. So they did a song for that. And then, again, if we could get some money together, we could make a record. So we got a little bit of money together and a little bit of studio time and made Show No Mercy.
So when you're seeing these bands like Metallica and Slayer, I mean, obviously you're just a kid, too. I mean, what were you, 22, 23 years old?
I was 21 when I started it.
I don't even know how to ask this question, but did you ever have any inkling like, oh, my God, this is going to be a huge
Never,
band?
Ever in a million. None of us did back then. We were just doing it because we all loved the music, and no one ever thought this was going to be. I mean, if we thought we sold 10,000 copies back then, that was like a platinum record for us. We'd be dancing on tables and things. So, yeah, none of us ever thought in a million years metal in general would get as big as it would, let alone bands like Metallica and Slayer.
But see, that's
so huge.
But also, too, like I was just thinking, how you mentioned how Trauma had a song on Metal Massacre, which was featuring an unknown cat called Cliff Burton.
Yep.
And you put Cliff with Metallica in their path.
Yeah, it was just one of those things where, you know, I'd seen the band. They, you know, these had these manager guys, and they had a fairly professional demo tape, and they were playing a show at the Troubadour and said, come see the band. So I went and saw the band. Band wasn't great. Bass player, though, was amazing. So it kind of stuck in my head, I guess. And then
what was he doing to make you know he's amazing?
Well, if you watch them, the rest of the guys were decent players, but there's no real personality. But they're this guy wearing these big bell bottoms and this jean jacket with this crazy hair, just like this. It was a tsunami of everything going on his part of the stage. It's all I could see when he played. I just stared at him the whole time. I didn't care about the singer or anybody else.
He's already had that Cliff Burton stage presence.
Oh yeah, absolutely, big time. Mm-hmm. So a couple weeks later. Lars asked me, hey, you know, we're looking to upgrade a bass player. Do you know anybody that's good? So, well, there's this band Trauma that played here a while ago from San Francisco. They're coming back again. You should come see them. So James and Lars come out to the Troubadour, watch Trauma, and maybe, I don't know, 15 minutes in, Lars goes, that's going to be my new bass player. I go, whatever you say. Sure, Lars.
Yeah.
But he somehow made it happen.
He's a lot like you. He makes things happen.
Yes.
Against all odds, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. So, all right. And then sure enough, he's their bass player and they moved to San Francisco.
So when do you start becoming a full-time record label?
Well, I guess I sort of did that about a year or so in. I was doing a million things. I was going to college. I was doing the record store. I was doing the fanzine. I was promoting shows in L.A. I was helping the local metal station on their metal show. And at one point, it was just all too much, even for, you know, 22-year-old kid. I can't stay up 24 hours a day as much as I like to. Mm-hmm. So I kind of just divested myself of all the other stuff and just concentrated on the label about a year in. Still not knowing if it was going to go anywhere or do anything because I wasn't making any money, but it was taking up a lot of time. It was fun. So I thought, well, let me try to do this and see where it goes. And I didn't get out of my mom's garage until 3 years after I started it. And then we had a first little office. And I think that was when I kind of felt, okay, we got an office. I got a real employee. Maybe this is turning into something.
Like the first year you're in business, how much money are you making?
Probably nothing. I mean, enough, let's put it this way, enough for gas and food, because I was living at my mom's house, and, you know, gas, food, and concert tickets, it's all I really cared about. So I was able to pay for that the first year, and that was fine.
Because you're not much of a party guy. Like,
not really. I mean, you know, we would go out and on the weekends and have some adult beverages.
Who would you hang out with?
Betsy Bitch and her boyfriend David and the Steeler guy. I mean, all that whole crew there, the Metallica dudes, like all of us would hang out in Hollywood. Every Friday, Saturday, we'd go hang out at the show. Then we'd all end up at Betsy Bitch's house afterwards until God knows what time in the morning. And
who was the craziest like drinker at the time?
Well, is this going to get me in trouble if I say it? Probably. Well, there were two. Because Bitch had like a million bass players, but their original bass player, he was probably the worst one, mm-hmm. and then not followed far behind by Dave Mustaine.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah, yeah. That's because Dave was still in Metallica at the time.
Oh, yeah. And he was. We had some legendary parties at Betsy Bitch's house with all those guys.
Is Betsy Bitch still around?
She's absolutely still around.
She sounds anything but a bitch.
Bitch still is performing. We're doing a book signing in L.A. for the book, and she's going to come be on the panel there. So, yeah.
You know, when you're a 14-year-old kid and you see Bitch, it's almost like a bad word in 1984. Like,
well, that
bitch.
Was a real bad word. That was, I think, one of the reasons that prevented them from, you know, kind of getting bigger than they were, because people were like, you can't play that on the radio. You can't say
that. Yeah.
It was terrible.
I mean, she was even more metal than Saxon because they're originally Son of a Bitch, and they changed their name to Saxon to avoid the problem.
Exactly.
And she was like, there you go,
Biff. They didn't care.
Yeah. When you talk about Mustaine and in the book, there's an interesting part where you tried to get Megadeth after Dave left Metallica, but you lost the bidding war.
Yeah. Dave, I wish I had this letter, but I think all of our archives got destroyed, which is why there's not a lot of pictures in the book. Mm. All of our archives, old demos, pictures, everything were in a storage unit at Northridge, California. And in the 1994 earthquake, it got completely destroyed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I had this, Dave sent me this really nice letter, and it's like, hey, you know, we'd love to be on Metal Blade. I'm starting this new band, yada, yada, yada. And it was like this long two-page handwritten letter, because, again, it's 1983 or whatever.
Yeah.
And one of the distributors, Relativity, had started their own metal label called Combat. They, of course, had some money. I had a little bit of money at that point. This must be 80, when was Megadeth, 84?
85, I think.
85, you're right, 85. Business,
yeah.
So we offered them 7,000 and Combat offered them 8,000. And they, of course, smartly went with the higher bid. And that was the big bidding war for Megadeth back in the day.
Was that a lot of cash, 7,000?
That was a lot of cash back then.
Yeah.
That was a lot of cash. That was the most I'd ever offered a band.
Oh, really?
Point. Yeah, absolutely.
So what's it like even this day, like if there's some kind of there's a band that you want, but you just lose the bidding war? Just another day at the office? Or does it bug you sometimes? Do you feel like you're like, oh,
it
shit?
Depends on the band. I mean, we, you know, Ghost started out on our label, and I love that band and spent a lot of time and energy and blood, sweat, and tears to really get them up to a big point on that first record. And look, they got an amazing deal with a major label for a ton of money. I mean, we're in the running, but it got crazy at the end. So that one stung a little bit just because I had spent so much time and effort mm-hmm. to really kind of get them to that level. But again, at the end of the line, they've had a great career. It bothers me more if we lose a band to another label and they don't go on and have a successful career.
Gotcha.
That bugs me more than if we lose it and they get big. I mean, now mm-hmm. it's like, hey, they're huge. It's awesome. We played a little role and it's great.
What about for a band like Flotsam and Jetsam, who have some steam and a great first record, and then Slagle comes in there and gives it once again? You're like Lars's. You're like Dana Strum was with Ozzy's guitar players. You're like Lars's bass pimp.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
That was a weird one. So again, Lars, called about the bass player after Cliff passed away. And when Joey didn't want to do it, I said, I think I have the right guy for you, this guy Jason Newsted in Flotsam and Jetsam. And it was a bit of a quandary for me because Flotsam was a big band at the time.
On your label.
On our label. First record done really well. Super excited by it. But, I felt it was for the greater good of metal to sacrifice him for Metallica. And yeah. I knew he would be the right guy.
Which he really was, because that first Flotsam record, I don't know how rated it is now amongst old school metal fans, but it's a great record, and there's some great bass playing on that.
Oh yeah,
the two epic songs on that record, just crazy bass.
And that was Jason's band. I mean, he was the guy. So not only was I taking him to Metallica, but you also didn't know if Flotsam was going to continue because that was his band.
And once again, you're taking a guy, much like we talked about earlier with Blaze, who's in charge of a band, to become a sideman.
Yeah,
this is your job.
We had a lot of long conversations about that because I told him up front with Jason.
Yeah.
I said, look, this is Lars and James's band.
Right.
You're going to go into this band, you're going to play bass. That's all you're going to do. Mm-hmm. You're going to have no say in anything. You're not going to write any songs. You're not going to do anything. You can just play bass. So if you can do that, but he was a massive Metallica fan, so I think he would have done anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at the end of the day, that bothered him towards the end that he didn't have a creative outlet.
Right. Well, it actually led to his dismissal.
Well, I think that was more to do with his physical presence. I mean, he had rotator cuffs that were all messed up, mm-hmm. and he couldn't, even if he wanted to, he couldn't continue because he couldn't move mm-hmm. on stage. He was so damaged from that. Mm-hmm. So a little bit of both, I think.
There's a great story in the book. I don't know how great it was for you, but you're building this label with all these bands, pioneers, big bands, small bands, and then there comes a sea change where, much like 8-tracks to albums or cassettes, they start bringing in CDs. But you, being like me, and I'll tell you why in a second, hold on to the fact of vinyl and almost lose the whole business as a result.
Yeah, I was. People kept telling me, stop making vinyl. CDs are coming in, they're replace vinyl. I'm like, no, I grew up with vinyl. Vinyl's not going to go away. It's the greatest format ever. And so I listened to no one. And one day, all of the distributors in the U.S. decided, we're going to ship all the vinyl we have in our stores back. And me, like an idiot, not stopping to manufacture it, had a lot out there. So much so that I owed our distributor a lot of money.
So how does it work? So if you have, let's say you have 1,000 albums, mm-hmm. you send them out.
Mm-hmm.
They give you money?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If they don't sell, they send them back, you got to pay the money back?
Yep.
Ooh.
Yep. It's all on consignment, basically. So you could ship 10,000 albums to stores, and they would, it's all on 30 days or 90, whatever the schedule of payments are, and they'll pay you, but they can also ship them all back and get credit for that.
That's what you always hear, like the Kiss solo albums, they all shipped gold.
Yeah.
And then returned gold.
Yes. So that's what happened to us. And so there was a period of time where I had no money. I really, for a minute, thought that's it.
And this is like late 80s, early 90s, when you're already up and running.
Exactly.
I've got a successful label.
I've got a staff. I have employees. I have things going on. So basically, I couldn't get a loan because, banks are like a record company. What do you own? nothing. I'm not going to give you a loan. So I got every credit card, those things you used to get in the mail, I used to throw away. I got everyone I could find. Got every I think I got 15 credit cards. And for about 6 months, financed the label through the credit
just cards. Credit cards.
Until we kind of got our footing back and was able to keep doing it.
You know, I can empathize with you, though, because I was a big vinyl guy, you know, growing up in the 80s. And I remember when it started switching over to cassettes, I still would hold out for vinyl. And I was a big Christian metal fan, and there's a band called White Cross, and their new album came out only on cassette, and I was like, I need to have it on vinyl. Like, well, we're not getting vinyl anymore. I said, well, I'm not going to buy this stupid cassette. I need it on vinyl. Well, we can order it for you, you know, that, like 3 to 6 months. I'm like, fine. And I waited 3 to 6 months for that stupid White Cross album, which wasn't all that great anyways, when I could have just bought it on the cassette. But by the time it came in, I was already buying cassettes. But it was a hard to switch from one to the other.
I didn't want it to go. I didn't believe it. And it went. But the only smart thing I did was I kept all of it. Like, for years, we had a warehouse with a gigantic wall of vinyl. People would go, why do you have all this vinyl? I could not bear to destroy it. It was like, it'd be like, you know, putting a pet to sleep or, you know, something I could not bear to destroy it. I go, I just can't. I can't do it. And luckily, it came back around at the end of the day. They were able to sell all of it. So
you sold vinyl from 1989?
Yep. So at the end of the day, it all worked and we sold all of it.
Genius Slagle here.
Well, not intentionally.
Let's talk about something else that became popular under the Metal Blade banner. Extreme metal and death metal. That's a Metal Blade specialty, and I want to know how you became involved in that scene, Brian. But first, let's get everyone's grub on. This is a great conversation. Always makes me hungry. I always want to have a little of my favorite pizza in the universe. How about some Little Caesars pizza? Satisfy your hunger with this amazing pizza deal from one of my favorite pizza places, Little Caesars. And right now, you can get the Little Caesars Extra Most Bestest Pizza for just $6. It's the most cheese, the most pepperoni at the nation's best price, $6 plus tax at participating location. Little Caesars always has your back. Delicious pizza that won't break your bank, man. And the Extra Most Bestest Pizza is hot and ready for you all day, every day. Little Caesars' claim of the most cheese and most pepperoni at the nation's best price is based on comparing the following pizzas from the top 4 national pizza chains. Little Caesars put their Extra Most Bestest Pizza up against 3 other chains is large, round, standard menu, one topping pepperoni pizza sold at everyday menu prices. And guess what? They were voted the best. But you can judge for yourself. Don't listen to my yakking. Go pick up a Little Caesars Extra Most Bestest Pizza at participating location for just $6 plus tax and enjoy the cheesiest, most pepperoni pizziest that your $6 can buy. Go to Little Caesars now. The Extra Most Bestest Pizza for $6 plus tax is available at all participating Little Caesars locations.
Talk is Jericho.
Another thing, just kind of thinking about stuff in the book, is how obviously you started kind of the early 80s classic metal, but another thing that became really more popular under the umbrella of Metal Blade was kind of extreme metal, death metal, whatever you would want to call that, horror metal, whatever the different genres are. How did that all come to pass?
Well, we were a little bit late, honestly, on that
really?
Stuff. Yeah, like, you know, bands like Morbid Angel and Obituary and Sepultura all were getting signed before that. Like a label like Earache got really heavily involved in
right.
that stuff. So we were a little late because, you know, I liked it, but, you know, I was like, everybody else is kind of signing stuff. So we were a little late to the party. But the first band that we did sign was a band called Cannibal Corpse, who ended up as being the biggest death metal band
this
of
day,
all
probably,
time.
Right?
Yes, by a lot. And that, you know, that was just a weird thing where Mike Faley, who works for us, is from Buffalo, New York. Cannibal's from Buffalo. He had a friend over there that said, hey, you should check out this band. Walked into my office and said, hey, my buddy said, these guys are doing really well in Buffalo. We should check them out. Gives me the cassette demo. And I look at the song titles, and there's a song title on there called A Skull Full of Maggots. I told Mike, I said, I don't care what this sounds like. We're signing this band right now. I don't care if it's any good, but I have to have a song called Skull Full of Maggots on the label.
You're like me. Like, I would judge songs by the titles before I even heard them. Like,
oh, totally.
Like with Summer in Time, when I saw Loneliness of a Long Distance Runner, I loved it. Even though I hadn't heard a note, I just saw the title and went, oh, that's the best song title
yep.
I've ever seen. I love it.
Yep.
So just by seeing A Skull Full of Maggots,
I'm in. I'm in. I don't care what it sounds like. We're signing. We're in.
But let me ask you, do you get death metal? I mean, like, so Maiden's your favorite band.
Yes.
And my favorite band, depending on what day, but top two, never farther than top three. How do you how can you put up with Cannibal Corpse when the vocals are so like?
Here's the thing though. I like all styles of music, mm-hmm. and the thing about those sort of vocals, if you get explained to it the right way, and the way it came about in the first place, is that, you know, music got heavier and heavier and heavier, but the vocals never really did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have this super heavy music and kind of clean vocals over that wouldn't make
like
any sense.
At the time in 83.
Exactly. So, or even Slayer.
Yeah.
Slayer or Venom are the ones kind of started the ball rolling. So when you hear
I would
that.
Say Metallica had clean vocals with this heavy.
Yes.
Slayer and Venom started going more
with the heavier vocals. Yes. So when you hear that and you hear this really heavy vocal with really heavy music, it makes it just super heavy. And I love extremes. So this is extreme stuff, especially when it came out. So I like it. But again, you have to do it the right way. And a lot of people say, it just all sounds the same. What do you know? But there's melody to it. There's melody to Slayer. Mm. There's melody to this where you can hear Cannibal Corpse and, you know, either Chris Barnes or George Fisher singing, and there's a melody going on there even in the, you know, rough vocals. And the good bands have that melody even in the vocals that other bands don't. It's an acquired taste. I get it. I understand a lot of people can't do it, but I love all of it.
Well, I used to get a kick out of, okay, so like Hammer Smash Face or Dripping Entrails from a Virgin's Cunt, which is the feel-good song of the summer.
Yes.
Reading the lyrics, which are very intricately long-written, well-written lyrics for that.
Yep.
But when you read it, it's just like, you know, I went to the store and found a hammer. It's just like... How does that say I went to the store and found a hammer?
There's some
people love it though, man.
Yeah, you know, it's
even
it's,
to the point of being in the Ace Ventura Pet Detective.
I know. Can you believe it? That's so funny.
Yeah.
When that came around, I was like, they asked me if they should do it. I go, well, I don't know. And I saw the script, and the script was awful.
If you're just reading that without knowing anything, because Jim Carrey was a nobody at the time,
exactly,
you'd be like, this is terrible.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
And I told him, I go, look, the script is terrible. Might be kind of a jokey movie, but I mean, I'm not going to tell you not to do it.
Yeah, it's a major motion picture.
Yeah, and then when the movie came out, as I hadn't seen anything, I didn't know anything, and the producer and the director said, hey, you know, because they're all big Cannibal fans, along with Jim Carrey, who was the one that requested them.
Jim Carrey requested Cannibal Corpse?
Jim Carrey requested Cannibal Corpse. He's on stage with them singing, like he was hanging out with them and totally singing all the songs and stuff. He loves them, or he loved them. I don't know if he still does. Yeah. Anyways, to come to the movie, and I had to sit between the producer and the director. I'm thinking, oh my God, this movie's going to be terrible. What am I going to say? And of course, it's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
And it worked out great for Cannibal, too.
And they got a great scene in the movie.
Oh, yeah. Even better on the DVD version, because I think in the theater one, Jim, I don't think he was singing with them.
Yeah, he ends up on stage with them.
Yeah, but there's an elongated version on the DVD. Well, it's now the one that you see on TV all the time is the long one, but...
So, I mean, it's funny. You're kind of I used to call myself the Clive Davis of heavy metal for Winnipeg. I would find bands and bring them to my friends. Like, what'd you got this week? Here's Raven. Here's Lizzie Borden. Here's Metallica. Here's Anthrax. You know, here's Law's Rocket. Whatever it may be going through the whole different eras. Hades was one I found in the late 80s. You're going to love this album. You're still doing that to this day where with all the successes you've had, and you're talking about Cannibal Corpse and Armored Saint in the early days, Slayer, and still one of the big, I'm looking at it right now, looking at it, looks like a gold record of Amon Amarth, who is another huge band that's exclusively a Metal Blade band that I'm assuming you discovered.
Yeah. One of our guys in Europe, they had an original EP that they put out in Sweden. And I was over there and he said, hey, I found this band Amon Amarth. They put out this EP. They're pretty good. What do you think? Listened to it. Thought it was great. Let's work with them. And signed them up and... they've been there ever since.
But once again, do you ever think, like, okay, a Viking band that has a Viking ship on stage and they're selling out venues in the States? Because that's, to me, okay, that's a Nordic thing. They're going to do great in Europe. They're doing great here.
Oh, I know. And even with, you know, I mean, the vocals are heavy, but they're still kind of, you know, can understand a little
bit.
Yeah. But for what they're doing and how heavy the band was, especially when they started out, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, they played Chicago Open Air a couple months ago on the major stage right before, you know, Ozzy and all those bands played. And they had this huge show, and there's, I don't know, 30, 40,000 people going crazy. I mean, it's just nuts.
Big giant Viking ship right in the middle of it.
Oh, it's awesome.
I love that
fire.
Shit.
And
what bands amazing. Do you have your eye on now on Metal Blade that you have think has some chance?
You know, there's some interesting things going on now. You know, there's so many different genres happening. I always kind of like to look, I try to like look ahead at like, what do you think is the next thing coming? And there's a couple things. There's a band called Igorr, Igorrr, that's hard to describe, but there's There's elements of, you're going to think I'm nuts when I say this, but there's some EDM elements, but there's some black metal elements. It's like a DJ guy with a guitar player with this crazy image. And I was a little bit worried when we signed them, people are going to get this, or we're going to like people look at it like, oh, what are you guys doing? But everybody loves it. It's really interesting what they're doing. So another band called If These Trees Could Talk, that's, I guess they call it post-rock. And it's all instrumental, super heavy riffs with like this kind of orchestral lead guitar stuff over it. Russian Circles, if you know them, they're like the biggest band of that sort of thing. But they're really super exciting. I've seen them live a couple times. They're amazing live. And they have a really interesting thing and really big buzz on that. So those are two bands that are pretty cool. And there's a bunch of other new stuff coming out that's really good. I think the problem we have, though, in metal now is how do you get these bands to the next level?
Right. And how do you do that?
That's the tough thing. Yeah, right? It's really difficult to do that because there's so many different ways that people listen to music, and there's so much noise out there, so many new bands. Like, how do you break a band through? I don't know. Right now, it's very, very difficult. If you look at Spotify, for example, which, you know, streaming is the future, and we see it every day getting bigger and bigger. If you're a pop or hip-hop band, you know, whether it's the Chainsmokers or The Weeknd, they were all discovered through Spotify playlists. And millions of people in these other genres go there. Metal fans will go there yet.
If you're talking about Spotify, let's say The Weeknd, what would a Weeknd song stream? 10 million, 100 million?
Well, hundreds of millions.
So Judas, our new song, has done 4 million, and they're freaking out, like loving it. Oh, 4 million streams on Spotify.
That's huge for a metal band.
For metal, wait, right?
Congratulations on that.
Thanks, dude. Thank you.
I was actually at Sony not too long ago, and you know, saying I will tell you on your podcast the following quote. I said, "So does Fozzy have a chance over there? It looks like it's doing well." And they go, "We really think so." So
nice.
That's awesome.
Thank you, man. We've always championed us, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's awesome.
But that's what I mean. So when you're talking about, because I was talking to M Shadows about the same thing, you know, we as in metal guys, rock guys, we can't compete with those type of numbers that they're getting on those the big, you know, rhythm and blues, R&B or like top 40 or hip hop streams. So metal, even though it's still huge in some ways, it's still as underground as it's ever been.
Yeah, totally. And I think we need, you know, but it reminds me a little bit, not in the sense that in the late 90s, it was kind of not in a great shape.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now there's a ton of great bands and things are doing well, but the mainstream is not paying any attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping the pendulum will swing back. You know, it seems like every beginning of a decade, there's a switch in music, certainly in the metal world. So hopefully, you know, we're coming up on a decade change again. So I'm hoping the pendulum swings back again and music with real instruments and guitars kind of comes back into void as opposed to computers and, you know, DJ things.
How about for monetary gains or rewards for the artists? I mean, you've been there since the heyday of the record business to the lowest times, but it seems now there's a little bit of an upswing.
It's coming back so fast.
For what reasons?
Well, streaming. It's really all about the streaming. And you know, we were really concerned about this year going into it because, you know, we're predominantly a physical business. And that's what we do. And we knew we were going to lose maybe 20% of our business this year in physical. It's not good if you take 20% of any business. And we weren't sure that we were going to make that up or how much we would make that up in streaming. We have more than made up for the losses in streaming. So, and every day you see it becoming more and more. And I tell artists all this now because everybody's like, oh, we don't get paid anything. We, you know, we get 0.0001 cents a play or whatever. It's coming. We see it. It's real money now for us. It's starting to be real money for the artist. Every time you get a statement, you'll go, oh, wow, I got more money on streaming. Oh, wow, I got more money on streaming. And if it goes the way the experts say, and not experts within our industry, but, you know, venture capitalists and other people whose jobs it is to look at industry growth and predict what it's going to do, you're talking about potentially in 5 years or maybe longer, 6-7 years, we'll be making more money as a label and also the artist than we have ever. So we'll see. We have to get there, but it's getting there really fast. And you know, you'll start seeing your statements go more and more. I mean, right now, it's rare in a month that we don't have more streaming income than physical income.
Well, I know, like, too, like, just from the streams that we had, it's like, oh my God, you guys have sold like 50,000 equivalent singles from the streams.
Yep.
So that now is being monetized, and like, okay, listen, it's millions and millions of streams, but it equals a fraction, but it's still, that's 50,000 sales.
Yep.
Which you did not have Exactly. 3 years ago when people were just were still stealing the music, quote unquote, some buying, mostly just listening. Now you're actually getting that from the Spotify streams.
And I think it's the best of all worlds right now in the music business. You've still got vinyl going strong. It's not going to go anywhere. You still have CDs. It's less than it used to be, but you're still able to buy them. And, you know, for the streaming for $10 a month, you can listen to whatever song you want to pretty much wherever you want to. I mean, you know, when you and I were kids, $10, you had to figure out which one album am I going to buy.
So true.
And now for $10 a month, I can listen to anything I want to pretty much wherever I want to. And that business model, I think, really works. I think people will do that. And people are consuming their media, whether it's music or TV or movies, in the streaming world. That's where everything's going.
People still have money to spend on entertainment. They still
absolutely
do. You know, it's funny. I like onto that. I remember I always wanted to get Living in Stereo by the Cars, but I didn't want to buy a Cars record. And I was like, I wish there was
the Cars.
Well, I like them now, but at the time, oh, I was like, okay. I wish there was just a way I could just buy one song.
Yep.
And now you can.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the one thing people ask me a million times about, you know, what all this stuff and how readily available it is for music. Two things it's done is it's made music. More people can have access to music than ever before. And it made bands be accountable. Because back in the late 80s, you know, you would buy a record and there'd be one good song on it, the rest of it was terrible.
Right.
And you already bought it.
Yeah.
But now with the people listening to it, if you don't make a good record,
you're right,
you're not going to sell it. And I think that's a great thing.
Yeah, it's a great point.
It's made bands accountable. It's made them, okay, we got to step it up here. We can't, like, you know, just kind of mess around with
it. Can't just throw any fillers on
exactly
here to do that, you know?
Exactly.
When you go and see, I know you just went and saw Metallica at the Rose Bowl?
San Diego.
And it's your buds, you know, your little Danish buddy with the drum set in the corner and the shy cat, you know, I just saw Metallica a month ago and they still are the best heavy metal band. Like I saw, you know, throw a band out there. I've seen them recently. Metallica blows them away. Do you still find that with them?
Well, here's the thing that really struck me. I mean, I've always thought that because they're at such a high level, but it really hit home for me this year. So I saw them at Webster Hall in New York City.
Small venue,
15 or 200, 2,000 seats, whatever it is.
Maybe 1,500, 1,000 maybe.
I forget what the cap is.
It's small.
I've seen, I don't know, 100 shows there, tons of shows. And it's really rare since I've seen Metallica in a venue where I've seen that many shows. And even this year, I probably saw 5 shows there. They are at some other level. Like after that show, I told Lars this after the show. I go, dude, honestly, I've seen a lot of shows there and I've never seen a band play that kind of show at that level. I mean, they're just, you know, people can hate on them all they want, but there is no one even close to touching them, especially as a live band. I mean, they're just unbelievable.
I agree. And you, like I said, you put anybody up there, Black Sabbath or whoever you like better than Metallica, Metallica's better live.
Absolutely, without a doubt. I mean, that show really, like I said, I always knew that. I always loved seeing them because I would go out and hang with them for 3 or 4 days in some city where they're doing multiple shows. I'm like, by the third night, I get bored. But the third night, I'm like, they're still so great. I have to go see them.
Yeah.
But that show at Webster Hall was like, okay, I get it. They're like 50 levels above anybody else.
And conversely, seeing them in the stadium at Atlanta Stadium was the same thing. You know, this is a stadium. It's a backyard. It doesn't matter. It's the best metal band that you can see in
yep.
the world right
yep.
now. You know.
Yep. Absolutely. I agree 100%. As much as I love Iron Maiden, you know,
Maiden's too.
Amazing
yeah.
live
yeah.
too. But I think Metallica is just that one step above.
And maybe, Rod. Maybe it's a North American thing. Maiden's a little bit British. Whereas Metallica, I don't know if that makes any sense, but there is no rock star airs on stage with Metallica. There are four dudes just rocking.
Yeah, there's no rock star airs with them off stage either.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
they're like,
but, yeah.
I mean, I, you know, again, I saw them at the San Diego show, and I hadn't seen James in person for a while, so it was great to see him. And it's like they're the same guys that I knew in 1982.
Still talk metal?
All the time. Well, Lars and I, a lot of time when Lars and I get together, we revert to 16-year-old kids and start
always.
Talking about, you know, remember Witchfind and, you know, play something on his phone or some crazy thing.
I sent that screenshot to you the other day that was listening to music on Shuffle and Trouble, Revelation, Life or Death came on
nice.
from the what is now the Psalm 9 record, but was originally Trouble. And that was the first song I ever learned on bass guitar, the most random of songs. Because the kid that was you say your friend's name, John?
Yeah, John Cornerin.
So mine was Kevin Ahoff, and he was a guitar player, really good right off the bat. And he's like, okay, I got a song to play. Okay, I've got a bass now. Learn this. And he showed me how to play it. It's really hard. There's like 8 parts on it. And this is not like Iron Man, or which is not easy either, don't get me wrong, or Smoke and Water, but it's just like, there's like so many, and it's just like, now. How the hell did I learn that as my first song on bass? I'll never know. But I sent that screenshot to you, and I sent it to Lars too. I'm like, dude, what do you think of these cats? He's like, oh, I love Trouble, man. They're so great. The Psalm 9 record, The Skull's Better. And we're having this talk about Trouble, a band who should have been bigger, but from an album, you know, 32 years ago with the biggest drummer in heavy metal and the biggest music mogul. And we're still reverting back to, well, The Skull is better than Psalm 9. Yep. Well, I don't know. What about Run to the Light? You know, you still have that vibe.
Well, because we're all fans.
Yes.
I mean, that's why we got into this first place. And that's why I think we're still
we
all
still
doing
do it. Yeah.
And still all doing it at a high level because we're all fans. And that's why we do this in the first place.
Who are some of your favorite all-time bands on Metal Blade?
Oh boy, you know, it's a tough question. There's some. I mean, look, obviously Slayer, you know, and I'm still really good friends with those guys, and you know, they were great. I mean,
did you have to license those first couple records to American, or do you still own them?
No, we own them all. Yeah, we
so
own
Show No Mercy, Hell Awaits,
Show No Mercy, Hell Awaits, Haunting the Chapel, and Live Undead, all ours.
They're still Metal Blade records.
Yeah,
you still get the checks from that.
Yeah,
that's crazy. That has to be your biggest band.
Of all time, sure. Yeah. Well, the Goo Goo Dolls, maybe, but that's all.
Forgot about
story.
Them. That's another other band that you found.
Punk rock. They were a bunch of punk rock guys, and this is the only thing, because people say, how did the Goo Goo Dolls end up on Metal Blade? Well, we had a subsidiary punk rock label that we had with DRI and COC and Dr. No and Cryptic Slaughter, who Blasco was the bass player for. It's crazy.
I just remember that metal years at the beginning, they're filming all the guys in the crowd. The guy goes, Cryptic Slaughter!
That's awesome.
With Lizzie Borden in that, too.
Yep. So we signed this band from Buffalo, New York. Again, Mike Faley, his connection in Buffalo, this band, the Goo Goo Dolls, were a great, super cool punk rock band who eventually put a ballad on a record that became super huge. But what I will say about the Goo Goo Dolls is they opened for Cannibal Corpse once in Buffalo. So there you go.
And you know what's that's great. You know what's funny is I used to work out in this little gym. It all ties together, Brian. It was a YMCA workout gym next to my house. And the guy had a little ghetto blaster, if we can say that, boombox, I guess. Whatever it is. And I remember, you know, I'd always bring my cassette to play, and he had a couple in there, the guy who worked there. And I remember he had a Goo Goo Dolls record, maybe a cassette. And I just looked at it. I remember, like, Metal Blade? Is this heavy metal? He's like, nah, not really. It's more punk. But they're on Metal Blade. How can they be not a metal band if they're on Metal Blade? That was always the thing in my mind. Like, you know, if it's on Bonzai or Metal Blade, it's going to be good.
But we run the gamut, though, from, you know, the super heavy to King's X and, you know, everything else. So.
You had King's X on Metal Blade? That's right. After the first couple releases,
Yeah.
Did you have Galactic Cowboys, too?
Absolutely.
I love that band,
man.
Me, too. God, that Space in Your Face album has to be in my top 100 of
amazing.
All time.
They're definitely one of those bands when you ask, like, who should have been bigger, Galactic Cowboys. They were so amazing. Wrong place at the wrong time, I guess.
Yeah, who should have been bigger besides Galactic Cowboys?
I kind of think Armored Saint should have been, you know, like we were talking earlier, that we thought they were going to be one of the, you know,
Symbol should have been a breakthrough.
Yeah. I mean, it did great.
Yeah.
But it just didn't quite break them to.
Did it do gold at all
level.
Or anything like that? Did they ever
Not
get those
quite,
levels?
Not
but a song
quite.
Like Rain of Fire, like Last Train Home is a accessible song for that time frame.
We know we got a lot of great stuff on there, but just for whatever reason, it just didn't
I know
quite
it's gonna be
break
19,
through.
1991.
Well, that was part of the problem.
That's
things
when it came
things
out,
were
right?
definitely going in a different direction fast at that point.
Yeah.
So
Armored Saint, Galactic Cowboys, Trouble.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, Trouble.
Ahead of their time, right?
Yeah, way ahead of their time.
Now you talk about Caius and Orange
Even
Goblin.
Even Lizzie Borden.
And,
you know, Lizzie Borden. I mean, again, they've had a great long career and a lot of successes, but they never got that pinnacle of where we thought they were going to be. But it's always, there's usually a story behind it. As much as I love Lizzie, he never quite had the right management team behind him. And you need a team of people to really make it get to the next level. And he never really had that.
There's only so much you can do on your own, right?
I mean, look at Metallica. You know, they have Q Prime, you know, the biggest managers out there. They weren't when they started.
They've
with
also,
Metallica.
But there's an X factor there. They've also got a guy like Lars,
of course,
who I don't think takes no for an answer ever. I think that's one of the reasons why. I mean, the three of us maybe have hung out, but barely have hung out. I think the three of us are very similar people. We don't take no for an answer. I don't take no ever.
Yep.
Unless I'm talking in business, obviously. If a girl says no, I'm not going to do it. You know, that's actually the name of my next book. It's like no is a 4-letter word. It's an evil word that you just hear no. It's like, okay, like, fuck that, dude.
I agree.
Go out and make it happen. And I think when you do that and ignore no, you can get a lot farther. And that's why maybe Metallica did get farther than a Lizzie Borden, for example, songwriting.
Sure.
I mean, because maybe Lizzie was not as, no, this is what we're doing. You know what I mean?
I agree 100%.
What's it like for you when you've mentioned there's been a few times when you've had dalliances with major labels? Do you play well with others in that case?
Well, it's kind of weird how it's all kind of come around now. So obviously we had a relationship with Warner's in the early 90s, which when we went there, they're a really cool, awesome independent label that had founded, you know, Hendrix and Joplin and, you know, the Eagles on and on and on.
Yeah. Van Halen.
Yeah.
So you talk about even meeting with Mo Austin, who's the guy who was behind
Legendary. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they were our guys there. And then, you know, halfway through our deal, they got bought by Time Inc. and became this gigantic corporation. Very corporate, and everything changed. I didn't like that. We had a lot of problems with that because we were going to put a Guar record out, and they said, you got to take this song off.
Right, yeah.
And I'm not taking a song off a record. So I went to Mo Austin. I said, like, look, if you're going to start telling me that I got to take songs off of records or I got to change lyrics, I can't be here. And you know, that was pretty ballsy on my part.
Sure.
Whenever I was 28 years old.
I just envision you.
One of the legendary guys of all time saying, like, I got to get out of here.
I'm envisioning you walking with Iron Maiden shirt, and it's a big, long table with him sitting at the end of it. And it's just like, you know, like a 20-foot walk where all you hear is your feet. Yes.
Kind of, sort of.
Yes, Mr. Austin.
But he was amazing and said, I agree.
Really?
I don't like it either. And we'll facilitate you guys and leaving, and we'll sort it all out. And they were amazing about that. So that gave me not a bitter taste, but just kind of I just like the independent attitude of everything. But we kind of have the best of both worlds now, because we're an independent company. Nobody owns us. But we're distributed by Sony almost all over the world now. So we're able to work with Sony on a variety of levels. Like, for example, Mon and Marth was a joint venture with them on the last record, where we did North America and Sony did everywhere else. Our distributor in the U.S. is owned by Sony. So we kind of have the best of both worlds. So we've licensed a lot of stuff from Warner. So we play very well with the majors at this point, as long as we don't have to be owned by them.
Yeah, right. Two last things. When you're the head of the company, do all decisions go through you? And have they always, like, from artwork and all that sort of stuff?
I mean, pretty much. I will say that there's not a record that comes out or piece of artwork that I don't approve at the end of the day, or if somebody's going to sign a band here, it has to eventually go through me. And if I don't like something, I might suggest a change. I mean, I can't tell an artist, like, hey, you got to change. Right. But sometimes...
So what's your excuse for the original cover of Night on Brocken?
Young and stupid.
It's a face warning for a song with the worst album cover ever.
Here's the weirdest thing about that. So this is, and I'm not going to disagree with you at all on that. It's terrible.
Another huge band that you discovered too, by the way.
Of course.
Face warning, yeah.
But literally, you know, so this is back in the day, again, not a lot of money, and, you know, we kind of scraped together some money to remix the record and stuff. And so I got the artwork. I wasn't really into it, but the band's like, no, we love this artwork. And I'm like, I guess.
It's like a really horribly drawn picture of a witch getting burned at the stake in, like, crayon.
So here's the funny thing about that. So eventually we changed it because it was so horrible. We changed it to like a moon
just
or something.
A moon, yeah.
And we had a ceremonial burning of the original album cover, which we did in whenever that was. So for a long time, it was just this other album cover. Then all of a sudden, I don't know, 10 years ago, our European office said, we're getting a lot of requests. We're redoing vinyl and stuff. They want the vinyl with the original cover. Like, really? Yes. We put it out. People go nuts.
Of course.
People love it. So now the version that's out now is, again, that original.
It has terrible. To be.
It's come back into
it's
vogue
what you
after
remember,
all this
yeah.
time.
Because that one, even I'm looking over here, Show No Mercy is a terrible cover as well.
Hey, in 1983, that's not so bad.
With the little
yeah,
devil tail on the end.
That was a little weird, but it's 1983.
Yes, yeah. That was actually probably sold records back then, you know?
Yeah,
I was always the opposite. Right. My friends would buy that record, I'd buy Striper.
There you
go.
We'd
have listening parties.
The Yellow
Last
and
question.
Black Attack.
That's it. Which is not a great cover either. Is there anybody that you still could meet in the metal world that you'd get a little bit excited to meet, or have you met them all?
Oh, there's I've been lucky enough to meet almost everybody, but there's still, I think the only guy I haven't met yet that's alive that I would freak out about is Tony Iommi.
Oh!
I've never met Tony Iommi. I've met Geezer and hung out with Geezer. I know Ozzy, Bill Ward, all those guys. I've met them a zillion times. They're all super nice. Never met Tony Iommi. I would
wow.
be very, very scared of Tony Iommi. And I've met him once. So we had this conversation, but Steve Harris, which is also really weird because I know all the other guys
yeah,
in Maiden.
I'm scared of Steve.
I know Rod really well. I interviewed him in 1981 for my fanzine. And he was awesome.
Did you have to fly somewhere to meet
I flew to Houston, yeah.
yeah.
I flew to Houston to do
Steve,
it.
Yeah.
And ever since then, I think it's a bit of a long story, but I took a photo with him once at the end of the night in Nashville, Tennessee. But he was kind of one of my friends got it, and I don't think he was very happy to do it because he was trying to leave.
Yeah.
I go, no. He's like, so. But it was like photoing out.
When I first started getting in contact with the Maiden guys, I went and talked to Steve a bit. He's quiet, kind of shy. And he just intimidated so much because I didn't know what to say. So yeah. I could talk to Nico for hours. I've had Bruce on my show. I went fishing with Adrian. All the guys are great. But whenever I see Steve, I don't even try anymore. I just kind of go the other way. I have to get officially have him booked on Talk Is Jericho where I have to talk to him. And then I get it figured out.
It's funny because like Frankie Bello, who we all know is the greatest guy in the world, he was telling me those Anthrax guys, like, wait, you've never met Steve Harris? Said, well, one time. Like, really? He's like the nicest, sweetest guy ever.
That's what I always hear.
That's what everybody says about him. Even I told that to Lars. Like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Like, well, I don't know, man. I've never been in the position where I've been in the same room with him where it's one of those, because I'm not going to go up to him and say something's got to come up.
I always kind of wonder, does he even know what Metal Blade is? You know what I mean?
Like, I mean, I know he does because one of his son's bands, they were trying to get us to be signed with him. So, I mean, but supposedly he does.
Tony was on my show last year. Through one thing led to another, had him on the show. And then I hosted the Metal Hammer Awards in London this year, and he was there, but I was working, he was busy, and I'm like, I never got a chance to say hi to Tony. 3 days later, I get an email. Hey, Chris, it's Tony. Sorry, I missed you. You did a great job in comparing. And I was like, holy shit. I took a picture of it. I sent it to Lars. I'm like, dude, look at this. He's like, you fucking asshole. I'm like, I win.
That's awesome. Well, dude, again, you're hosting the Loudwire Awards in October, and Tony Iommi's getting
He's going to be there again.
The big
thing. Are you going to be there?
Yeah, I'm definitely there. We're one of the main sponsors there. In fact, I did a big thing. They were talking about Tony Iommi and the greatest riffs and all this stuff, so I did a big whatever it is.
Well, dude, here's what I'm going to do. After you introduce me to Lizzie Borden and Armored Saint and Trouble and all these great bands, I'm going to introduce you to Tony
Iommi. All right.
I promise.
I'll take you up on that.
I promise I will.
Take you on that. I'll try to be cool. I'll tell you, though, really quickly, off the metal topic, there's one person that I've never met that I don't think I ever want to meet.
Who?
Mario Lemieux.
Really?
Favorite player of all time. And I've met a million hockey guys. I've met Gretzky and hung out with him and all these guys. But Mario, just, I would be just in awe of. I know all these guys who work for the Penguins. I've known Yaga forever. I don't even want anybody to introduce me to him because I just freak out.
Well, just on top of that, so I went into Palm Springs, Palm Beach, golf thing. A friend of mine's there. Went with my wife. We're hanging out. And I'm in the bar, and Gretzky's there. And because he was in the tournament, I'm like, oh, my gosh. So I go over to him, like, hey, Wayne, Chris Jericho. He goes, dude. He goes, Chris Jericho, I'm your biggest fan. How are you? He was super loaded, but he was a fan of wrestling, I guess.
Nice.
And he even did this one. He goes, oh my gosh, you're my biggest fan. Where he's trying to, he's like, and then I got my picture with Gretzky, and he's just super drunk, and he gave me his number.
Oh, wow.
So I texted him a couple times and got like one thanks.
Yeah.
It's probably like, you know, why did I give this guy my number?
He's
a
super nice guy, though.
He is a great guy.
Super nice guy. Brian Turner, who used to run Priority Records, is a good friend of mine. He grew up with Gretzky, and he's also another Winnipegger, by the way.
Okay, there you go.
So when Gretzky was playing in L.A., like, I was lucky enough to have dinner with him a couple times with Brian, and I mean, all it was like me and Brian and McSorley and Gretzky, and could not, I mean, this is the height of his career.
Yeah.
Could not have been a nicer, more humble guy.
Yeah, well, that's all the best guys are.
Exactly.
Just like you.
Oh, well, thank you.
And now, Reflections with Raven.
Give a man a fish and he'll eat for a day. Teach a man to fish and you'll feed him for life. Unless, of course, he's a fussy eater and doesn't really like fish.
He's so nuts. Listen to The Raven Effect now on the Podcast One app or subscribe at Apple Podcasts. It's great. It's very, very fun and entertaining. So go ahead and subscribe to all the Jericho Network podcasts and let us entertain you. Let us entertain you all week long. And remember to leave everyone a 5-star rating and review at Apple Podcasts. Killing the Town with Storm and Cyrus. They have a special women's themed show this week with Taya Valkyrie, who also appeared on Talk Is Jericho. She's making the rounds this week. And also Rachel Ellering / Rachel Evers and Chelsea Green, Laurel Van Ness. So they're all Lance Storm students.
Lance's Training the Ladies. Also, Rock Talk with Mitch LaFon. Mitch has always got some great, this week actually, a very controversial interview with Guns N' Roses drummer Steven Adler that he did a few months ago, something like that. I think it got Steven and Mitch in a little bit of trouble from the Guns N' Roses camp. You want to listen to that. And of course, the Team Tiger Awesome Show, Ridiculosity. Lance Storm helps review SummerSlam last week, and that was a good one. So Lance, keeping it in the family with Team Tiger Awesome and Killing the Town, joining forces. And of course, Keeping It 100 with Conan, my favorite podcast of the week. Always hilarious, always ridiculous. You never know what you're going to get with those guys. Conan, Kevin Gill, Disco Inferno, the Lucha Minute, Mass Republic Minute, talking about Lucha Libre. Shane Helms is always lurking around there. Lots of great stuff. And, of course, Dave and Tim at Beyond the Darkness giving us our paranormal fix every weekday, 5 days a week with brand new episodes. And you can get in also on their True Crime Tuesdays as well. Dave and Tim are also doing a weekly True Crime Tuesday podcast. And you can check that out by signing up at patreon.com for just $5 a month, and you'll get a new episode every Tuesday, and they're commercial free, no commercials. Sign up now at patreon.com. Thanks again to Brian Slagle from Metal Blade Records, the guru behind the heavy metal scene of the 80s in a lot of ways. His new book is called For the Sake of Heaviness: The History of Metal Blade Records. It's a great read. It took me about 4 hours to check it out. Tons of amazing stories about the bands and music that Brian has helped and released over the years. You can get that book at my Amazon store. We got a link to it, amazon.com/shop/IamJericho. And while I'm thanking people, I want to thank you, the sexy beast listeners of Talk is Jericho, for supporting all of my sponsors, including DDP Yoga. Go to ddpyoga.com/Jericho, get 25% off the DDP Yoga DVDs. Bombfell, go to bombfell.com/Jericho, bombfell.com/Jericho. Get $25 off your first battle juice. My bookie, sign up to mybookie.ag and use the promo code Jericho to get your deposit matched up to 100%. Also, Little Caesars, extra most bestest pizza, so tasty. And Geico, save money on your car insurance. What a great group of sponsors. What a great group of people listening out there. Thank you for listening. Keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next, and coming up next Wednesday. Wow. This one is pretty damn huge, man. Doing the first and only interview that I can recall of anybody in the Guns N' Roses camp since the reunion has taken place. My good friend is going to be here. The exclusive Guns N' Roses post-reunion interview with Duff McKagan. All right, how's that for A-list guests? Nobody else on the planet. Eddie Trunk did not get this. Howard Stern did not get this. Adam Carolla, Chris Hardwick, Joe Rogan, no. Chris Jericho, Talk is Jericho, with the returning Duff McKagan, talking the Guns N' Roses reunion, talking the Appetite for Destruction 30-year anniversary. Duff is here. The knock-knock jokes are back. It's going to be a great show, and only here on Talk is Jericho can you get that. So we'll see you on Wednesday. Duff McKagan's Appetite. Duff McKagan returns. You'll be waiting for that. In the meantime, in the between time, that's it. Stay hard. Stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy!
Listen to new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday on the Podcast One app, or subscribe at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.
Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million, what color is the White House?
I know this.
Five seconds.
Oh, switching to Geico could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay. Judges? That's true, Kevin. They'll allow it. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo! Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Simmons SD550 electronic drum kit, just $399. Add your choice of AKG K52 headphones or a Shure SM48 mic, each just $39. Plus, the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing, lessons for the beginner on your list, and gift cards. The perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center.